Evening, welcome to the very final 12-man podcast of the season. Oh, I'm depressed already. Yeah, it's not the podcast we wanted to record, but it's so soon, but we're having to. But let's get it over and done with. We'll hopefully keep you laughing for the next hour or so. You got me, Steve Jackson. I'm in the main chair, as cheerful as possible. Mr. John Donovan's with me. Evening, JD.
Now then, you okay?
Yeah.
Recovered?
Yeah, I'm recovered now. I can talk now. I couldn't talk for a few days after. So yeah, we're good, mate. We're good. Good to have you on. Mr. John Cutler with us. Evening, Coach.
Evening, gents. Hope we're all right.
Yeah. You?
Yep, yeah, all right, mate. All right.
We're good. Well, yeah, we're going all that, don't worry. And we've got Mr. Steve Dixon with us, evening, Dicko.
Yeah, evening lads. Hope you're all okay. I've just got out of rehab last night.
Oh, God, that was me after commentary that away. Getting out of rehab, Jesus. You all right?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Good. You've been signed off anyway, so that's hot in. So anyway, we're yeah, so we're all back together one last time this season. We're all a better shade after the sun. It's been a nice sunny few days for us all. We've all enjoyed a bit of the nicer weather, so we just kept our moods up. So hence why we're doing this now, because a few days ago I'd rather have jumped in the teeth. So here we go. Let's have a chat about. We're going to talk about Coventry. We're going to talk about positives about it. What's in the negatives? We'll talk about the season as a whole. Loan players, which you're bringing back, which you're not bringing back, and our moments of the season as well. Because I've got a fair few. The lads have got a fair few, and yeah, we're going to talk you through them, and yeah, we'll hopefully bring a few laughs to your face because my moment of the season is funny as, so it should be a good one. Right, Coventry. Let's get Coventry out of the way. Right, John Don, Coventry. So team news comes out 7 o'clock. I've got myself in the ground by then. Ground's already starting to build. Atmosphere is getting going. One change brought Marcus Force in for Jones. I think we all pretty much agreed on that one, didn't we?
Well, I think I remember saying that I would have left Jones in
Good
and
start.
brought Fors on rather than the other way around. But Michael Carrick makes the decisions, and it wasn't it wasn't a sort of a wild choice, was it? I mean, like you say, there was a lot of Borough fans would have made the same starting 11 given the choice. So yeah, I was pleased with the lineup and eagerly looking forward to the game.
Yeah, no, I was exactly the same. When I say we all agreed that Force would be in there at some point. So that's my disclaimer. No, you're absolutely right. It was a strong team. It was a very strong team. It was a lot of confidence in the ground. Coach, were you confident when you saw that team?
Yeah, well, you know from previous podcasts how confident I was in the squad and the gaffer. I was quite happy with the team considering the injuries we had. Obviously, Howson would have been there or thereabouts if he'd been fit, as would Fry, but he was never playing after a month out or 2 months out, whatever it was happening. So, yeah, I thought we went as strong as we possibly could, and yeah, I was happy enough with the team, to be fair.
Yeah. Would you make that a full house? Were you happy with the team?
I wouldn't say I was happy, no. I wouldn't, no. I'm just being honest, you guys shaking your heads there. I obviously know what I think. I was
What change
praying
would you
that
have made then?
I was praying and hoping that the captain Johnny Howson was going to be back. Because I think he's really important in big games like that for his experience and know-how. So I was praying that he was going to be back. Like John Don, I was hoping that Isaiah Jones would have started the game and we would have left Marcus Force as an impact player to come on. And with hindsight, I think that might have been the better choice. I obviously wanted, for everybody that listens to the podcast, Anthony Dyche to start at right back. because I thought he'd give one more in the home leg driving forward. And again, with hindsight, I think that would have been a better choice because when he come on, I thought he did well. But it was probably the team I expected, if I'm being honest. But I wouldn't say I was overconfident in it. I knew it was going to be a tough game because we've played Coventry 3 times before Wednesday night and failed to beat them. So it was more or less what I expected, but I had a few concerns.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from with the concerns. Obviously, you know, the three previous games, we haven't obviously got a victory out of them. But say I was in the ground pretty early Wednesday. I was with our driver Jason. He was in with me. Who actually said he thought he'd go to penalties on Wednesday night, and I'm so glad it never, because I don't think I'd have caught through that. But I think we knew it would be tough. We knew it was going to be a tough game. They're a good side, Coventry. But I mean, we were all in the North Stand, weren't we? But top of the North Stand, John Dom. That first half, I don't recall Coventry really having a huge chance to take the lead. I thought we were the dominant team. We were just missing that final pass, that final moment to get us into the box to get a clean effort away at goal for me.
Yeah, I don't think there was a great deal between the teams in the first half. Stefan had to be smart to smother the ball. Was it Gyökeres who come through with the ball at his feet?
Yeah, Tommy Stefan was his back pass wasn't too clever.
Yeah, Stefan had to be alert to that. Other than that, you know, there wasn't really a great deal going on. It was a pretty tense affair, but 0-0 half time. You think, yeah, come on, let's go second half. They were kicking towards us in the North Stand, and you know the atmosphere was great. Before kickoff and at kickoff and in the first half, Coventry fans played their part, and I just thought, you know, at half time we can kick on. I thought we were going to be stronger second half, but unfortunately, we know it didn't turn out like that.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, just before I talk to the other two about the first half, the atmosphere before the game was absolutely phenomenal. It was absolutely amazing being part of that. I'm so glad that John Foster listened as well, and you know, took the advice of the fans on board and turned that music off, because the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. I saw you at the front of the stand, obviously waving the big flag at the front in the corner, and obviously the flags are on the stadium, which looked absolutely amazing, by the way. And it was such a joy to pull out on Tuesday night. The whole place was ready. It was just ready. And you just thought it was a special night coming. And depressed already. It was just such an unbelievable atmosphere. But, Kutz, what did you think of the third half?
Yeah, pretty much like what you lads have said. I mean, you say there that Coventry didn't really have a chance. I can't really remember us creating anything in the first half. It was fairly even, like what John said. There wasn't much in it between the two sides, but I don't know. I just, in the first half, even at 0-0, I just thought, is this going to be one of them days? Even though I'd been so positive in the build-up, there wasn't much for me. There wasn't much in the first half between the two sides.
No, there wasn't for me. I think that's why I alluded to. There was no final ball edge for us. We were pretty comfortable in midfield. I thought Hackney and McGree and you know the likes had that comfort in midfield, and Mowat as well. We're comfortable and we had the ball and we were passing it about. But it was a lot of, it was like going back to the days of Mogger, side to side to side, and that's all it was. And it was, there was no cutting edge going forward. You know, some players weren't on the game and it wasn't great. I'm looking forward to doing this bit now. But Dicko, tell to me about your first half. How did you think of this?
Well, I would like to start off by saying how proud I was of the Middlesbrough supporters, because I think that was the best pre-game And, you know, when the teams come out to the Riverside atmosphere, I think I've ever witnessed. And, you know, I've been to all of them, all the big games at the Riverside over the years. And I thought it was incredible. I thought the stadium was absolutely bouncing. And I thought the players couldn't ask for any more from the supporters. So, you know, anybody listening out there, you lads and lasses doing your job, that's 100% for sure. So that was a massive boost for the players, or it should have been. And I don't know whether the atmosphere got a few nervous or it was such a big occasion for one or two, but it seemed to take a long time to get into the game. There was a couple of opportunities that flashed across the box that, you know, but perhaps could have took advantage of. And I remember saying to my dad at half time that one goal could win this and whoever scores first could win it, because it felt like that type of game. And you can't say that, but I'm sitting here now thinking if Middlesbrough score first, we win that game. It was a nervy affair, like the lads have said. And at half time, I thought that Middlesbrough's big hitters and Akpom, Archer, McGree, Force, Giles, I thought, you know what it is? We can't really play much worse, really. Second half, they'll get the team took by Carrick and we'll come out swinging second half, attacking the North Stand. And I suppose my biggest disappointment to Wednesday night was not so much the first half, but the second half display when they come out.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what you said there about the pre-match atmosphere. I know I said a little bit there, and it was amazing to be part of, and to get to the top of the North Stand and have the lads and lasses around me help create something at the back to bring it down to the front and get it around the stadium. And yeah, it was amazing to be part of. It was amazing to see as well, because it did take me back a bit for a couple of minutes when I just looked around and saw all the flags. And it wasn't just one stand, was it, as well, at the best part? It was all four stands, and, you know, we all stood in unity as one and give it absolutely everything. And you're absolutely right there, Dicko. You know, the fans turned up, as you know, as we all asked them to last week. We all said, please, please turn up and give it everything, and they absolutely did. But no, you're right about the first half. I said the same thing at half time. I thought, we don't score first, that we could be in trouble here. But I was confident we were going to. I was really confident we were going to. It was just a matter of time for me. But we're going to the second half now. I'm going to try and dissect the goal a bit, because there's so many views of the goal you can take. I'll start with you, Dicko. Was Stefan right in coming out as far as he did to try and get the ball? I know I'm not in no way saying it was ultimately his fault, you know, the ball went over his head or went to the side of him or anything like that, because there was a lot of play after that, and there was a lot of bodies between the ball and the goal, and, you know, there's a lot of moments where we could have cut the ball out. Do you think that was the start of a bit of panic at the back?
Well, I think the second half was started quite panicky, and Coventry had a few chances in the second half which they could have scored from, and obviously the goal came just innocuous ball over the through ball over the top, and I thought Stefan had to come for it. Now, I think he was a little bit unlucky the way the ball bounced up at him, but I think it was the right decision to come, because he got something on it and he stopped the striker scoring, because if he had stayed on his line or stayed penalty spot, it was a straight one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and I think he would have just went through and scored. So I think he made the right decision to come. I think he was slightly unlucky with the way the ball ricocheted off him and went wide. I think he was even more unlucky that the fact it went back to a Coventry player. And what probably slightly disappointed us about the goal was when Hamer picked up the ball, there was three or four Middlesbrough players and Stefan around, and we just seemed to give him too much time to pick his spot. I think the players should have been flying out at him to block the shot, and they just seemed to, I don't know whether they weren't aware of where they were in the box, the way the ball broke to him, but they just seemed to stand off him and let him cut inside. And don't get us wrong, it was a brilliant finish by him. And when the ball hit the back of the net, I knew we were in for a long night at that particular moment.
I mean, I'll tell you a little bit what I said after that goal went in. It's not pretty. But
Oh,
no,
don't say don't. You haven't got £5 for the swear jar.
I didn't swear. I didn't swear. I did not swear, so I won't swear. Don't
Surprises
worry.
Me.
I didn't. To be fair, I just leant back on my seat and I put my head in my hands. But it was what I said after Jason that, yeah, wasn't great. But John Don, I'll stay with you. You know, we obviously, you know, we were right at the back of the North Stand, as I was saying there. Where did you feel the goal came from? Was it, you know, the bit of play between Gyökeres and Hamer? Was it the fact that, you know, the line of defence wasn't in tandem? You know, it was very jaded. It just didn't look right. You know, what was your breakdown of the goal?
Well, we gave the ball away. I think that's fairly obvious. We gave the ball away, and then when the ball went out to Hamer, collectively, we just retreated and tried to sort of position ourselves on the goal line, except for obviously the goalkeeper who was off his line. But I agree with Steve. I would have liked to have seen one but a player just race out to just try and block his options. But because we were so far off him, he had the whole of the goal to aim at. And he's a good player, and he put it in a good sweet spot. And it was a well taken goal. I just think we could have done a bit more work in trying to prevent it. But yeah, that sickener of a goal, you know, it's a nightmare. And I have flashes and I see it again and again, you know. And yeah, it's really knocked my ending.
Yeah, it was. Go on, Dicko.
I was just going to say, over the two legs, I mean, Coventry are a decent side, and I don't want to sound bitter saying this, but I was a little bit disappointed with Coventry over the two legs in the tactics. They just seemed to want to put 10 behind the ball at home, 10 behind the ball away from home, and just try to soak up the pressure in catch Middlesbrough. And it in the home leg, it nearly went really badly for them, you know, with the crossbar goal just offside. And if we'd have taken them chances, I think the second leg would have been totally different. But they came out for the second leg exactly as they did for the home leg, and just sat behind the ball. And I've just done a couple of stats there off the two games, the away leg and the home leg. Middlesbrough actually had 64% possession over the two legs. In terms of shots on target over the two legs, Middlesbrough had 3, Coventry had 2. That's over the two legs. Big chances in the game in the games over the two legs. Middlesbrough only had 4 and Coventry had 1. In corners, Middlesbrough had 14 to their 6. So even though them stats are still fairly tight, they're still in Middlesbrough's favour over the two legs. And to think that Coventry over two legs only had 2 shots on target against Middlesbrough with 36% possession and beat with, and we failed to score at home for the first time under Michael Carrick, is a travesty, an absolute travesty. And those are the type of things that when you're sitting in your own private moments, you think, how did we let that happen?
Dicko, the thing is, they're preparing for Wembley. Their fans are getting everything ready to go down at the weekend and enjoy the playoff final at Wembley. Yeah, you're right. It probably favoured us on the stats. But you know what? Stats don't score your goals, and they got the single goal and they're through. You know, the hardest thing for me, apart from the final whistle and walking home, I didn't get myself a taxi. I walked home, just thinking about, you know, what might have been. You know, the worst thing after that was next day having to ring up the hotel that I'd had 30 rooms booked for, the coach company that I've said I don't need to use your transport, the t-shirts that I was going to get printed that I had to sort of say to the guy, sorry, we don't need them now. You know, it's all those daft little things, but it just drives home to you the opportunity that we missed on that night. It was a massive, massive opportunity for the Borough to get in the Premier League. I just hope and pray that, you know, we get another chance as good as we had this season.
Yeah, sorry, just having a bit of a moment then. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The day after, I mean, I'll go into the day after in a minute, but what I did, it was pretty depressing. Coach, what was your take on the goal?
Well, listen, for me, I've had one of the best seasons in recent memory. I don't blame Stefan for the goal. Collectively, could we have done better? But it's football, lads. It doesn't always work out the way that we want it to. Shock horror, I disagree a little bit with what Steve said, where he's disappointed with Coventry. If Robbins had come out and played football, open football against us, he knows they wouldn't have won. It was a tactical masterclass by Robbins. It was a performance over two legs we created next and out against them. And you can ask John, we had a pint before the game on Wednesday, and I said to him about Sunderland fans criticising the way Luton played. They will not give a hoot about how they played and how they defended and the tactics. He got it spot on. Like I say, if they'd have come out and played attacking football against us, they could have got absolutely walloped. Fair play to them. They're going to Wembley. We're not. We move on. It's one of them things for me.
It was a bittersweet pill to swallow after the game. John Don's right. The day after was even worse for me. I think the shock of it on the night was a bit like overpowering, but it's the day after the realization that, you know, you wouldn't be going to Wembley. You know, we said, didn't we, on last Tuesday when Sunderland's, you know, found out their fate and Luton did the job on them. Don't laugh yet. Do not laugh yet. You know, and we paid the price. We paid the price for two poor legs. You know, we did our job in the first, but second leg, we didn't get going. You know, we took too long to get going. And I said to Jason straight after their goal, I went, we won't score here. There's no way we'll score here. I had no confidence at all. It was gone. And it was horrible. Go on, coach.
I will say this, over the two legs, I don't think you can fault the commitment.
No.
It just didn't happen for us. It was just 180 minutes of football that we would never have envisaged from what we've watched under Michael Carrick. It's football, lads. Sadly, it's bitten us in the backside this time. But like I said, we've had a great season. I'm already looking forward to next season. Done and dusted. It's all gone. I know we're talking about it tonight. We're all sad about it. But we move on, lads. We move on.
Well, like I said to you lads before, this is the first time I've talked about it. So, the first and last. So, you're right. It was, I was more disappointed, I think, with the subs that came on, because there was absolutely no impact from the bench for me. I know Crooks had his moments. You know, he could have put himself in good positions. He flicked it down to Archer. I don't know how Archer hit the bar, by the way, right at the end. I know he was offside, but Jesus Christ. But Jones came on, Dyke Steele came on, and that famous partnership we were all told about, I didn't see it. I didn't see it. They both just stood there and looked at each other, and I thought, do something. Please do something. And I'm not saying it was all resting on them, but am I the only one that thought after about 75 minutes, we ran out of ideas? Go on, Diggo.
Just a few points on what you have said there. About this, well, first of all, to answer you, Steve, about the substitutions, I thought Dyke Steele only come on done well. The first thing he done was drive down the right-hand side and knock a great ball to Zaire Jones, who had a great chance to put the ball in the box and blazed it into the north stand. Zaire Jones had a poor night. I thought the substitution of Matt Crooks was done too late. I thought he should have made that substitution earlier to come on and work himself up front and give a different dynamic. But I thought Barleza, again, he's had enough opportunities now to make a bit of an impact, and I'm hoping next season is going to be his season where he comes good for, because so far, to be honest with you, he hasn't done a great deal for me on the opportunities he's had.
Yeah.
And again, that was another big opportunity for him to stake a claim, and he just hasn't done it. And it's no good people saying, oh, he's only come on for half an hour here and half an hour there, because there's other players like Alex Mort who've come in and taken their chance at times. So that doesn't wash with me. But I don't think what Michael Carrick could have, in his wildest dreams, imagined on the night was that Akpom, Archer, McGree, Force, Hackney, Mort, Smith and Giles could all possibly put in the worst performance of the season on the same night. Normally you get two or three having off day, but when you're getting seven and eight having an off day, you've got no chance as a team. And I don't understand why that actually happened on the night, but there was too many way off the pace for Middlesbrough to win that game. And just going back earlier to what JD was on about with missed opportunities, I feel the same, that Middlesbrough were two games from the Premier League beating Coventry and Luton. And that's a huge opportunity to see if you can beat those two teams to get to the Premier League. And next season, as you know, you're going to have Southampton, Leeds, Leicester or Everton coming down with the parachute payments, which are bigger clubs than the ones that are disappearing. They're also going to have long trips to Ipswich and Plymouth, which are tough games on the borough, travel-wise, and all the rest of it. And the league's going to be tough next season. And what will fill me with a great deal of confidence as the summer unfolds is everybody's hero and our chairman, Steve Gibson, because I'm sure he is bitterly disappointed he's not back in the Premier League.
Yeah,
we know by speaking to him that he's motivated to get back in the Premier League. And the signings that come in the summer will prove his ambition to get back in the Premier League, because if we keep Michael Carrick, I feel we've got a huge opportunity next season to really, really go and push for the top two for the first time since probably Aitor Karanka. So I think it's over to Steve Gibson now to restore the faith, because the fans selling 20,000 season tickets have bought into it. And now we just need to see a little bit of ambition from the top to restore ambition, faith, and, getting everybody back on board.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I couldn't have probably better myself. It was, it is over. It is over at Gibbon now. You know, the fans showed that they've invested in what's going on, and we've got a bit of work to do this summer, and, work starts now. Go on, coach.
One thing I'm convinced of is that every single penny that Steve can put into that club on the playing side, he will put in. He's done it, absolutely zero doubt. Every penny available will be made available to Michael Carrick. It's about how we use it, how wisely we do it. Steve's exactly right. Next season is going to be really tough. You've got three. Well, the Southampton are down now. They're a pretty big club. And the other two that are going to go down out of them three, they are big clubs. Big clubs that have been in the Premier League for a lot of years. They've got a lot of money behind them. It's going to be a battle for us next year. But like I say, one thing I'm sure of, that Steve will give Michael every resource he can, that within reason of making sure that this club is sustainable and doesn't put us at financial risk. I don't want him to go out and spend money that we haven't got. And he won't do it. He'll spend what we can afford. And it's how we use it and how wisely. We've used it really well this year with the loan players. It's about how we do it next year. Let's hope they've got plenty of contacts and we can do it again next year. I'm sure they will.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's about making the right business decisions now, and how they're going to impact on the pitch. And, you're absolutely right. The teams that are coming down from the Premier League are huge. You know, you've got two big clubs and Leeds United that could come down. There's some big fish. I mean, Everton coming to the Championship is absolutely ridiculous to think of. For me, Leeds are gone. Southampton have obviously gone, or you know, they're guaranteed. You know, you look at League One as well. There's big teams coming from League One. You know, Plymouth are a decent club. Ipswich were a Championship club until a few years ago, and they went down. And they were, you know, they were European football 20 years ago. You know what I mean? You know, it's you know, this big, you know, Sheffield Wednesday might come back up. Barnsley, you know, it's Championship clubs that are going to have a good, want to have a crack and do what Sunderland have just done and get into the playoffs at first go. So it's going to be tough next year. It's going to be really tough. But I will say one thing. I don't think it's going to be as tough as what this year was, because I thought Burnley were incredible. Absolutely incredible. Sheffield United, as much as it pains you to say it, yeah, their squad was Premier League, wasn't it? Let's face it, it was Premier League. But the teams that are coming down, that they've got more, I think they'll lose more players. I mean, they're already talking about cut price deals for all these players to leave. Southampton, Leicester, Leeds, players like that. So the teams that came down didn't lose, you know, a great deal apart from Burnley, who rebuilt really, really well. So I don't think it'd be tough. I just think it's just going to be another Championship season. But yeah, you've just got to get stuck into it, haven't we, really? And, you know, if we have to hit, you know, hit the ground running, we can't give teams a head start like we did this year. We can't. Because that head start we gave them ultimately cost us, for me. Because, you know, we had too much to come back from. Go on, coach.
Isn't it an interesting point? And you're on about next season and us hitting the ground running. We've got a lot of loan players here in this squad. Out of the loan players we've got, they've been here a while now, they're settled in. Personally, other than Muniz, who actually I don't mind, but he obviously doesn't fit into Carrick's type of football. Other than Muniz, I would bring every single loan player back. They already know the rest of the squad. They're fitting in. They wouldn't need no time to settle down. I would bring all of them back. It's just an interesting question. Out of the loan players we've got, which ones would you lads bring back and which ones wouldn't you bring back?
I'll go John Don first. He was waving at me. I just didn't quite see him. Go on, John Don. I'll come to you first.
Yeah, I just want to mention Steve Gibson and his backing, and I was a bit taken aback on Wednesday when we played Coventry, because I got a phone call off Steve Gibson just before I finished work around midday, and he said, "I'm just ringing to wish you good luck for tonight. Wish me good luck." You know, he's a guy who's invested so much time, effort, money over the years into trying to make our club successful. And he's just said, I want to wish you good luck. Asked me how I was feeling. He said exactly the same as I was, you know, nervous, but looking forward to it. So, I mean, that surprised me. And obviously, he thanked everybody who helped put out all the flags in the three stands for Wednesday night, which I've got to also thank everybody, because there was volunteers from everywhere around the ground coming out. Has put out 24,500 flags to make the spectacle that it was. And then afterwards, when I was walking home, like I say, when I was absolutely distraught, walking home, trudging home, I decided to send Steve a text, and I just said to him it wasn't to be. That's how football is, but I know that we'll go again next season. Pass thanks on to Michael Carrick and his staff and the team. And I sent it and thought note of it. And then anyway, he replied, and he was very magnanimous. He just said, on the night, Coventry did what they needed to do. They deserved it. Good luck to them, he said. But plans are already in place for next year. You know, we're gonna try and make ourselves stronger. We want to improve upon what we've done this season. So that lifted my spirits a little bit. You know, hearing that ambition, and you know yourself, lads, because we've sat in front of him, talked to him, and His desire cannot be questioned.
No, no.
Sometimes decisions that are made within the club don't work out, but that's life in general. That's business. That's whatever you want to call it. Sometimes decisions don't go the right way, and you don't get the outcome that you hope for. But I'll just tell you now, lads, and those people who listen to this, Steve Gibson still got the desire to get this team back into the Premier League, and I know that he will do his utmost in the summer to do that. Now, going on to what John Cutler said about the loan players, I'd have every one of them back. I agree with him, barring Muniz, but you know, I think the players would also love to come back. All the messages they've sent to the fans and sent to their own teammates have proved that they've it's been a good, strong squad who really got on well with each other. Yeah, I think they'd come back. It's just obviously what their parent clubs would be asking, because it's all about money at the end of the day. But listen, we found those players, or like I say, we, you know, the club found those players, convinced them to come and join us. I'm sure we can do the same with other players, equally as ambitious and with the same quality that the loan players had this year. So, yeah, I've got over the disappointment. Just the next day at work was awful when people were talking to me about. I didn't want to talk to anybody about the match. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just wanted to sort of get on with my work and just be miserable. But people were talking about the game, and you get the people. Oh, I knew they'd bloody let you down. You just walk away, don't you? You just ignore them. But after a week or so it is now, and like I say, receiving messages off Gibbo, I'm hopeful, you know, that during the summer, good acquisitions can be made. We've already got a strong spine, strong base. We just need to improve it, and I'm sure we will.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, I don't know how to top that. What a speech. Go on, Dicko.
Well, you can't top that for passion, both from John and Steve Gibson, so I'm not even going to attempt to top that. But just got a couple of questions for you lads and people who are listening regarding the loan players that we're talking about. I'm never a huge fan and never have been a huge fan of loan players. Two reasons. The Premier League loans market, now the way it works, the best players always keep themselves till the last moment of the transfer window before the move, or the clubs let them move. And Middlesbrough have had an awful habit in the last few years of waiting for loan players, some of which have come, some of which have decided not to. But I think it has an impact on the start of our seasons, because our squad isn't settled, our squad isn't strong enough, sometimes for the opening five or six games. And I always think it's important to start well. And Middlesbrough haven't started well, from my recollection, for a long time in a season. And I think that a lot of it's to do with loan players. And secondly, the other bugbear with loan players is, if it's not going so well for them towards the end of the season, they're touting themselves either to go back to the parent club, or they're touting themselves for a move to go somewhere else. And it has an impact on the end of Middlesbrough's seasons as well. So I wish Middlesbrough would look at trying to sign permanent signings on 2 and 3 year contracts of quality, who are going to come and establish themselves at Middlesbrough over a period of time, and have a couple of loan players, real quality loan players, come in to bolster the squad, rather than the reverse of that. And just to throw a little stat, because I like my stats, as you know, in the mix, I went back over the last 5 years, right? So this is off the last 10 games of the season over the last 5 years, right? So in 2018-19, Middlesbrough had 6 loan players. In the last 10 games, we won 5, lost 5, and got 15 points out of a possible 30. The following season, 2019-20, exactly the same. won 5, lost 5. We had 4 lone players. 15 points out of a possible 30 in the last 10 games of the season. 2021, we got 11 points out of a possible 30. We had 4 lone players. 21-22, we had 5 lone players. We got 14 points out of a possible 30. In this season, we've had 6 lone players. Won 3, drew 3, lost 4. 12 points out of a possible 30. So the most we've got in the last 5 seasons, going into the last 10 games of the season, is 15 points out of 30. Now, to me, that has an impact because of the lone players you've got at the club who are leaving, who are touting for moves. Are they really that bothered when it goes into a, I'm not calling anybody out, but when it goes into a playoff semi-final and you've got lots of lone players hanging around, do they have that real desire if somebody that's going to stay at the club over the next 2 or 3 years? Now, don't get us wrong. This season's Middlesbrough's lone players have been better than they have been for a number of years. And we have had real quality. That's for sure. But it's just my instinct as a supporter that if we go down this route again next season, looking for Premier League players till the last second of the window, it's going to cost with the start and it's going to cost with the end, because it always has. And I just thought I'd throw that open to people who are listening, and obviously you three, to see what your take is on it.
Go on, Coach. I'll let you have your take first.
So I agree with what you're saying. In previous years, about players maybe not putting everything on the line. But I think Carrick, Keaton Scott, Gibson, whoever else is working behind the scenes this year, deserves a hell of a lot of credit, because I think every single one of those lone players put everything possible into this team. I couldn't fault one of them. Even Muniz, who's barely had a minute under Michael Carrick, has not caused one bit of bother outside of this club. Whether it's been happening behind the scenes, I don't know. But he's been on the bench a few times lately, so I don't think that's happened either. So I think they deserve a lot of credit. In the past, Steve, I agree with you, but not with these players. Like I said, I'd have every single one of them, barring Muniz, back. Out of the lone players, if we signed all them lone players back, would you be happy with that, Steve, for next season? Because they already integrated into the squad. They know the area. They know each other well. The camaraderie, like John mentioned earlier, from this squad this season has been absolutely fantastic. How many of the lone players would you have back?
I agree with most of what you've said there, John, to be honest. And this group of lone players has been probably as good as we've ever had. However, I don't think they will come back, because the other side of it, when you have lone players that come to your club and do exceptionally well, like Sivan Archer and like Isaac Steffen, Orion Giles, you know, it boosts their profile, not so much Middlesbrough's profile, and other clubs coming for them, other Premier League clubs coming for them. And for that reason, I don't think we've got a cat in hell's chance of getting the majority of those players back. I wish we could. I would love to see 3 or 4 of them come back, but I don't see it. And that's another point. Middlesbrough, basically, I put them in the shop window. But where are Middlesbrough now? Middlesbrough's foundations are built on sand. There's no foundation there. We're losing 5 quality players that are real strength to our squad at the moment. They're all going to disappear. Their careers will all go on. Yes, it's okay them putting on social media, we love the fans, we love the club. Well, if they love the fans and they love the club, they'll come back next season, won't they? No, they won't. They'll be off somewhere else, and we're left to build up, you know, to rebuild again. And this constant rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding by Middlesbrough, year after year, with 5 and 6 loan players, for me, it's got to stop. We've got to reverse it and go, let's bring in 3, 4, 5 permanent signings for Middlesbrough of quality that are going to be here to get what promoted over a 2 or 3 year period, and add a couple of loan players to it. Until we do that, this cycle is going to continue. Yes, we could have got lucky this year. We could have went up in the playoffs and got fortunate. And then we could have maybe signed Archer. We could have maybe signed, you know, Zach Steffen if we got to the Premier League. But it's a huge gamble to play every year. And like I've just said, that gamble hasn't worked in the last 5 years. So for me, we need to change how we look at loan players and try to start next season with a more positive start, both in terms of signings, proper signings, and getting off to a good start next season. Because if you get off to a good start towards the end of the window, the best loan players will want to join you anyway. That's my take on it. But Say what you, what JD, what's your thoughts?
Well, we had six loanees. Muniz didn't sort of feature really, but out the five, if you were saying we should sign permanent players and only have maybe two loan players, that would, out the five, that would leave three that we would have to sign permanently, right? And to sign three players of the quality that we had at this club on loan this season would be out of our budget. Loan players aren't cheap anyway. But to sign three permanently and have two on loan, we just haven't got the budget to do that. So that's why we've had to go down the loan route.
But I would rather we're going for like the Marcus Force for £2 million, a Riley McGree for £3 or 4 million, who have both come to the club on 2-3 year contracts and are doing very well for it. I'd rather Middlesbrough went down that route and brought another two or three Marcus Forces and Riley McGrees in, who are going to stay at Middlesbrough for 2 or 3 years and build something, rather than bring in these loan players who've got no intention of staying at Middlesbrough unless we get the Premier League. Yes, bring in one or two of them for that little bit of stardust, like what a Ramirez give away or a Cameron Archer give away. Yeah, absolutely. All for bringing in a couple of those. Push the boat out, get the two best ones you possibly can. But I'd rather bring in your Riley McGrees, I'd rather bring in your Marcus Force, who are going to build Middlesbrough as a squad in some sort of structure, because every season we're built on sand, John.
Well, which I agree. The fees that we paid for those two players you mentioned are great. But more often than not, the greater the quality of player and the more desirable they are to rival clubs, it just raises their transfer fee, and it puts us out of the market, unfortunately, at the moment. So that's why we've gone down the loan route. Again, getting loanees in isn't cheap, but it's that extra quality that we thought we could use to get us over the line, to get us to promotion, and it very, very nearly worked. This was the closest we've been since Karanka took us up. This is the closest we've been. And really, like I said, opportunity missed, in my opinion, and we could have easily done it. So I'm pleased of the contribution that each loan player made throughout the season. And yes, if we could have got players of the same quality signed on a permanent basis for the fees that you mentioned for Force and McGree, yeah, brilliant, sign them. But you're looking at the prices bandied about now. Archer, for example, 20 million. Zach Steffen, was it 10 million that was mentioned in the press today? We just can't afford 3, 4, 5 of those. We can't do it. But there are bargains out there. There are gems in the UK or abroad, and hopefully our scouting network will be able to get some good quality permanent signings, and we can still use the loan system to bolster the squad. Because let's be honest, bringing the loan signings in meant that we also had a very strong bench, which enabled us to get as close as we did to the Premier League, which was very close this season.
Now, the reason that I mentioned these loan players, and I asked you if we'd keep them. So in a perfect world, it would be great to bring in Force, McGree, etc. But you've picked out players there that have been a big success at this club. So out of the loan players we've got, I think there's only probably one that we could possibly sign permanently on a reasonable fee, and that's Alex Mowat, which maybe we could get him for £1 million, £1.5 million from West Brom. The other players, because we're not Premier League, are probably out of our reach for signing permanently, okay? But if we bring them players back on loan, we already know what we're getting. All of them other loan players have proved this season that they are very high-end championship caliber players. And putting them in our squad and then a sprinkle of a couple of other players to strengthen, which we're going to go into later of where we think we should strengthen. For me, it's a no-brainer. Will we get them all back? I think it's unrealistic. But the question was, I would have every one of them back over the Muniz because we know what we're getting. They're already integrated into the squad. They know the area. They know the fans. They all settled in well. They never caused one bit of bother while they were here. I couldn't fault any of them, and that includes Muniz. Like I say, they're all high-caliber championship players, which will give us a massive chance next season.
Oh, my God.
I don't disagree with anything you've said. I just, you know, I'd rather we're concentrated on, say, a little bit of quality coming. I mean, when you think about it, this season, we didn't get Archer, and we didn't get Ramsey until January anyway. They didn't come until later in the season. So, you know, we went through them a large part of the season without them. And all I'm saying is I'd rather in the summer we're concentrated on bringing players in on permanent contracts to get off to a good start. Then in January, if we want that little bit of stardust, likes of your Archers and your Ramseys or your Gaston Ramirez, then push the boat out in January to get to the Premier League. But I'd rather we started the season with a decent squad with options and players that want to play for Middlesbrough. And I do think Ryan Giles would be a possible signing, by the way. I know he's a Premier League player. I do think he's not out of the budget to sign. I don't think he's worth as much as what people think. You know, Zach Steffen, there's nobody paying £10 million for Zach Steffen. I'm telling you that right now. So there's still negotiations to be had there over possibly another year's loan with a view to a permanent. He's not worth £10 million, I'm telling you now. Nick Pope just signed for Newcastle for £10 million. Now, I don't think anybody would think that Zach Steffen's worth more than Nick Pope. So I think that bar's been set by Newcastle signing him. So, you know, I think there's still a little bit of wriggle room. Aaron Ramsey, he seemed to enjoy himself at Middlesbrough. I don't see him getting much game time at Aston Villa. He's a possibility that could come back. So all I'm saying is let's get some players in, start the season off strong, get our main boys in early doors and start the season well. And then if we can get some loan players in towards the end of the window or January, so be it.
So if we got offered those five loan players, your Gibson and Bowser, decisions down to you, would you take those five players back on loan next season?
If I'm being honest, I probably wouldn't take Alex Moore. If I'm being honest, I think we can possibly do better, but he's done well for us. So I don't want to come across like I'm having to go to Alex Moore. And if he came back, I wouldn't be upset with it. I just think possibly I would leave him alone. Ryan Giles, yeah, good player. He's not great defensively, great going forward. There's other players out there that we could replace him with. But I think we need two fullbacks cuts. We don't just need one. We need two attacking fullbacks the way Michael Carrick works. Tommy Smith, as you know, I'm not a fan of. If the gaffer's not a fan of Anthony Dykstale, I think we need two fullbacks.
What about you? Stay out of the loan players. How many of them would you bring back?
I wouldn't be against bringing them all back, to be honest. I didn't think it was the worst set of loan players I've seen. I know you pinged out all the stats there about, you know, how many points we've got in the last 10 games, etc. I don't think that's related to the loan players, and I think that's squad depth and squad quality. I think we ran out of gas each and every time for me. You know, this year I think we put our foot off the gas too much. Last year I think last year we ran out of gas, we weren't good enough. Year before that, probably the same, out of position. I don't think that's related to loan players for me. I think that's more we were caught out, but you know, I'd say that's just my opinion. But yeah, I wouldn't be against all of them coming back. I'm going to go against you here, Steve. I actually think we should sign Alex Moore permanent. I think Moore's brilliant. I think he's absolutely brilliant. He's underrated as well. But that's just my opinion.
One thing I will say about Alex Moore, we've just paid him, like, I'm not trying to criticise me. Steve brought it up earlier. I agree with Steve. I don't think Barley's has pulled up any trees at all. It's still early days in his career. I hope he does it next season. But I think if you can sign Mowat for a similar fee to Barlaser of £1 million or £1.5 million, I think that's an absolute bargain for a Championship midfielder that we know. For me, will he start every game? Probably not. Hopefully we can bring someone in that's going to maybe give Housen a bit more rest. He's not getting any younger, even though I absolutely love him and he's been fantastic this season. But I think for £1 million, £1.5 million, Mowat would be an absolute bargain for me. 100, I wouldn't hesitate to pay that to bring him back.
The reason I say I wouldn't say Mowat isn't so much about his ability, John. It's I look at Middlesbrough's midfield and we're becoming very samey-samey with your Housens, your Hackneys, your Moats, your Barlaser. They're all very similar type of players. And I think what's really enhanced Middlesbrough this season is having the dynamic Aaron Ramsey flying up and down with his pace along with McGree. In the attacking options, obviously, were Force and Archer and Nakpom, but especially Aaron Ramsey. He's just give us a new dynamic in the midfield. And if I was Michael Carrick, which I'm not, but I would tell him if I seen him, I'll be looking to try and replace Aaron Ramsey for Conker and back. We need some more legs in midfield. We need some more dynamism. We need athletes. To get out of the Championship now, pace is key. And we've seen that this season with the pace we've had on our side. It's absolutely killed teams all season. So for me, the reason I'm saying Moat is I just think he's too similar to what we've got. And we need more legs.
Yeah,
I agree with that. But like I say, I just think as a player to come off the bench, he's a quality player. And I mean, we're talking about loan players coming in there, and it's hard to name players that you would possibly sell and who you can see leaving the club in the summer. But I think there's a couple of players for me that we could get decent money for that would help us strengthen the team that I would definitely consider letting go. One of them, I know the three of you are massively going to disagree with me. And the other one you might agree with. And it is controversial. It'll be 50-50 split with the fans who are listening. So for me, if any Premier League club comes in with a bid of between 12 and 15 million pounds for Dale Fry, I would let him go. Isaiah Jones is another one. He's not pulled up any trees this year, but I do like him as a player. If we got a decent bid for him and a Premier League club saw potential in him, he's another one that I would consider letting go for a decent price, where we could invest the money in strengthening the squad. They're two players that I think we would consider letting go if we received reasonable fees, and I wouldn't be adverse to it happening, to be honest with you.
What about Akpom, John? I mean, Akpom is getting a lot of interest. If what figure would you say the club would sit up and take notice at?
Listen, John, he's been fantastic this year. We've talked a million times about us at the start of the season. We all said we'd let him go. I think if any club comes in with a bid anywhere near £15 million, personally, if I was in charge of the club, I'd let him go for that, because he's had one fantastic, unbelievable season and I love what he's put in this year. But I think that's a lot of money to turn down for a player like that, mate. I really do, where we could invest it in. We are where we are. We're not loaded with money. Steve's thrown everything he can at the club. I just think, like say, Dale's a controversial one. Tuba, a lot of fans wouldn't sell him for 15 million. Would I? Yes, I would. And like I say, Isaiah Jones is another one. What about you three on them players?
Well, with Akpom, he's got a year of his contract remaining. I would I would say try and hang out for a bit more. If we were to consider selling him rather than let his contract run down and allowing him to go for nothing. So obviously you try and squeeze every penny out of it, but for the Championship top goal scorer. And I know people will say it's one season, but he didn't really get a great deal of opportunity in previous seasons. If somebody come up with 20 million, then you've got to consider that, haven't you? You've got to as a club. But like I say, we don't know. We all spoke to Kieran Scott. We all heard what he had to say. You know, he had targets lined up at the beginning of the year for both scenarios, whether we were promoted or not. And some of those targets were whether we were Premier League or Championship. So he wasn't going to, some targets he wasn't going to drop just because we stayed in the Championship. So we've got to hope that they've made decent progress with initial inquiries. It's always difficult over the summer. You get linked with everybody, don't you? The agents work overtime in trying to get their the players on their books noticed and get them moved so they take their cut. So yeah, it's going to be a busy summer. And I think we've only got something like, what is it, 4 weeks to wait until the fixtures come out. So let's just wait and see what happens. But I'm more confident now that our recruitment has improved over the last 18 months, 2 years. So we can, you know, something we can look forward to. New players that we sign under the radar, possibly that excite us next season.
So I think we're talking about Tubery. I think realistically, I think there's six clubs that would be interested in Tuber. So I think it'll be the three that come down from the Premier League and the three that go up from the Championship. So of the three players I mentioned there, I'm going to give you a bid. And it's a tough question to answer, but just yes or no. So Dale Fry, someone bids £13 million. Would you accept it, yes or no? Steve?
No.
John?
No.
Nicola?
No.
Tuber Akpom, £15 million. Did you accept it, Steve?
Yeah.
Nicola?
Can I give me a reason? I just yes or no?
Yes or no?
Yes.
John?
Reluctantly, yes, but like I say, I would try and get a little bit more out for him.
And the last
I just think with Tuber, if he wants to go, the same with Dale Fry, you've got to think about it. But I think Dale Fry's depreciated this year, his value, because he's been in and out the side with injury, hasn't been a first choice for Michael Carrick for a lot of it. So I don't think there's any chance in hell anybody's going to bid over £10 million for Dale Fry. So that encourages me to think that we might actually keep Dale Fry until his stock restores. But Tuber, I do expect somebody to come in with a bid between sort of £14 and £16 million for him. And if Tuber wants to go, well, then I would sell him, because there's no point keeping a player that wants to leave. I would love to think Tuber would like to stay. Middlesbrough would offer him an excellent new contract and keep him, because it's going to be incredibly difficult to try and get 29 goals back that you're losing. Unless Steve Gibson's going to really push the boat out and spend 20 plus million pounds on players, which the club just probably won't do. So I would rather try and keep my goals, because we've waited 32 years for Bernie Slaven's record to be broken. Then it's been broken and we're going to sell him. That doesn't sit too well with me.
So then the last player then, Isaiah Jones, someone comes in with a bid between 6 and 7 million. Do you sell him, yes or no, Steve?
Yeah.
Dicko?
It's never happening. There's no way anybody's bidding 6 or 7 million pounds
John?
For Isaiah Jones.
No. I think we keep him and try and encourage him back to the performances that we saw when he was ripping teams apart. He's had a difficult 6 months. But let's not cast him aside just yet.
Yeah, I agree. He's a young player, and I think a lot of it's in his head. He's a confidence player, and I think his confidence is down at the moment. And he's not smiling and looks like he's enjoying his football like he was a year or so ago. And we need to try and get that Isaiah Jones back, because if we get him back, he then might be worth a 15, 20 million pound player in a year's time. Then we've got a better conversation.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I asked the questions. Obviously, these questions are going to be going on inside the club. We found it between a lot of us, we've answered differently to all the players. The questions that we need to talk about, and it's something that's going to go on over the summer months. It's going to be an interesting summer at this club, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
No, you're absolutely right. It's going to be, I'd say the hard work starts now, doesn't it? You know, I mean, the conversations have already got to have started happening, and some of the decisions have already got to be made for me. It's going to be a tough summer for Borough. It's going to be tough to keep some of our stars. You know, some of our stars were brilliant this year. Hayden Hackney, I reckon Hayden Hackney will probably get some sort of interest this summer, to be quite honest. Go on, Cud.
There's a right back available on loan from Tottenham probably next season. Would you have him back, Dicko, instead of Tommy Smith?
Do you know what? No. Because at least I know, regardless of how bad Tommy Smith can play, he's given me 100%. So no,
I think we'd all be unanimous in that question. Like, to be fair, regardless of his quality, he wouldn't be brought back to this football club.
I don't want Jed Spence anywhere near this football club in a million years. I'm quite happy that Tottenham paid £15 million footballer for him. So, you know, he's their problem, not mine or ours. So, yeah, bugger him. But, right, one thing I want to finish on is I'm going to go around you and just get one story off you. You know, to put, you know, it's not been the greatest and most positive of podcasts. You know, let's face it. I want to put a positive end to it. You know, I want you to give me something you're going to take from this season, a story, something that's happened. It could be football related, non-football related. Obviously, it's happened to, you know, home game, away game, wherever it may be. But you're going to look back on and think, that was amazing. What, you know, proper enjoying myself that day or that moment or anything. I'll start with you, Cut. One moment from this season you think you're going to take and keep.
Forever. So, I know you said one, but I've got two, and I'll be very brief. Football-wise, Cardiff away was absolutely what a day that was. The bus trip, the game, the bus trip home, spending it with brilliant people, it was absolutely fantastic. But for me, my moment was something that we were privileged to share together when we were invited into the boardroom with Steve, Kieran Scott, Neil Bowser, and Michael Carrick. And the welcome we received that night was absolutely outstanding. And I couldn't thank the club enough and John for arranging it all. And, you know, for me, we got to know them personally. They were very outgoing. They answered any question we asked. It was absolutely fantastic night that. And that's one thing I will remember forever, to be fair.
Yeah, that's pretty good memories. I'll give you that one. Dicko, I'll come to you.
I'm going to agree with Mr. Cutler on the last podcast. Well said. A brilliant night meeting Steve Gibson and Michael Carrick and everybody else. It was a fantastic night to ask them questions and talk with them and get to know them. So, yeah, that was a real highlight for me and a privilege. And it looks like we'll hopefully get the chance to do that again in the near future, which will be even better. Regarding games, I went posh this season in one game. I went to the West Stand Upper and my daughter was back from university with her partner who doesn't really know anything about football. And we took her to the Riverside for the first time against Queen's Park Rangers. I think it was about 27,500 there that day. The ground was good. 0-0 half-time. Middlesbrough letting us down as per usual. And we come back and won 3-1. And to see me daughter and her partner up off the seats cheering and singing in the West Stand was a moment for me. And I was proud of my club again. There's been so many moments this season where I've been proud of Middlesbrough Football Club, both on and off the pitch. And that was just another one. So it was a nice memory for us.
Yeah, good little memories. I like them. John Don, go on, I'll come to you. Your memories from this season that you're going to keep and take forward with you.
Well, it's been a fantastic season. from Michael Carrick taking over. It's been a brilliant season. The style of football, the number of goals we've scored, how close we came to realising our dreams. One of the best away trips, there was many, but one of the best away trips was Norwich away. We come back in that game to win 2-1, scored in the last minute. And the away end just surged forward. And I know it's probably not for the faint-hearted, because there are some, obviously, older people who were in that crowd, but they just joined in. They were falling all over, celebrating. That was an absolutely crazy end to that game, and it just meant it led to a superb journey home. But there's been many of them like this season, but that match was a memorable one. Like you lads, when we met Gibbo and the others, was great. But last Wednesday, the atmosphere, the pre-match atmosphere from like 5-10 minutes before kickoff, with all the flags and displays in all four stands, and the noise that was belted out was just tremendous. And you know, that will be forever remembered. The game won't, and the outcome won't, but yeah, it's been a great season. It's just ended sadly, very disappointing, but we go again. We shall overcome. Up the Borough.
I'm not finishing now. You know, that's a good way of finishing. But yeah, no, there's some. Yeah, it's been some unbelievable memories this year. I mean, I'll follow on from what the form that you lads have taken, non-footballing wise. I say, you know, I could easily say, you know, being on that bus with all you lads and being in that boardroom, enjoying some incredible company. But my best non-footballing memory, honestly, is having the privilege of sitting down with you lads every week and dissecting everything, absolutely everything. And, you know, whether it's good or bad, you know, whatever it may be, from the days of Wilder to where we are now, it's been an absolute pleasure, and it's been amazing to do. And, you know, I'm already looking forward to getting stuck into my next season. And footballing wise, the two home games against Norwich and Hull, I've never seen us play as good a football in them moments as I've seen in them two games. Norwich, we absolutely destroyed 90 minutes. But Hull was different, but as effective, because we only did it in 20. In 20 minutes, we scored 3 goals, and we made them look very, very average, and we looked absolutely spectacular. And it's the best bit of football I've seen at Riverside for a long, long time. And, you know, to go from what we saw under Wilder, you know, games at QPR and Coventry and games like that, to go from that to what we witnessed at the end of the season, light years, absolute light years, and some of the best football I've seen, you know, supporting this great club. Go on, Kurt.
You mentioned yesterday about the pods. I'm sure I talk on behalf of the other lads, every single person that's been on this pod. Yeah. Thank you for all the hard work and what you've put into it as well, mate. You do a lot of things behind the scenes. You're the man behind the mic at the start, and I'm sure I talk for the other lads. Appreciate everything you've done, mate, so thank you for that.
No, it's, you know, don't put me at the top of the tree. No. No, it's, you know, I do it because I love it. And, you know, to have the privilege to sit down with you lads every week and talk football, it's what I'm good at. It's what I'm, you know, it's what I'll always be good at. And, you know, I've got plenty up my sleeve for the next season and to push us on and get us further out there. And, yeah, it's been... There's no need to thank me. Just thank you. Go on, Diggle.
Just to finish, lads, because it's the last podcast of the year. this has been my first full season on the podcast, and I've got to know you three well and class you as friends. And I'd just like to thank you all, thank the people who listen to the podcast and drop their messages and on Twitter and social media. It's much appreciated, good and bad. And all the guests who've come on this year on the show, give with the time and give with the expertise on Middlesbrough Football Club. It's always interesting to get different guests on. So I'd just like to thank you all. And if we can do it all again next season and get back to the Premier League, all the better. So thank you all very much.
So before we all start bubbling in this emotional roller coaster, we've talked about Coventry. It's been difficult for us all the last week or so. But I'm going to finish on a positive. We've got nearly 20,000 season ticket holders for next season. Mm-hmm. That's without warm-ups. We've got a manager and a backroom crew and the chairman that's going to do everything they can possible. I, for one, cannot wait till August. I'm going to enjoy the summer of a rest, but I cannot wait to go again in August. We've got the right manager. We've got the right backroom staff. We've got a decent set of players. Hopefully, the club will do everything possible. It's been one of the best seasons of following this football club, football-wise, and attacking goals. We've never seen out like it for years. On a whole, I would rate the season a good 8 out of 10 for performances, and I cannot wait till next season.
Here.
Well said.
I can't put it any better myself. I really can. It's been an absolute pleasure following this season, watching these lads. From John Don organising to get us here, there, and everywhere. And you know, I'll pass over to you, John Don, to say your last bit.
Like you said, we shall overcome. We'll support you evermore.
Yeah.
Oh, brother, we love you. That's simple. That's it.
That's all it's needed, isn't it? Yeah. And I'll thank probably our most loyal listener and the guy that gets us from A to B every week. Young Jason. Jason gets us everywhere without any problems, any hassle. And he's been an absolute joy this season. Been trying to get him on. I really have been trying. But he's too Mike shy, unfortunately. He won't talk to us. But even though he can talk for England when he gets going. But him and Delta have been absolutely brilliant looking after us and getting us everywhere and without fail as well. I know there was obviously, the trip home from Swansea was a bit dodgy, having to wait 3.5 hours for a new bus because the windscreen wipers stopped working and that, but it makes for the fun, doesn't it? And it was, it's one of the stories that you're going to take and think, that wasn't a bad way to hear that. Plus, we won, so I wasn't really fussed, so it was fine. I'll finish by saying thank you for listening. Thank you very much for listening and being part of it, being part of our little journey this season. And, I hope we've made you laugh throughout the season. And, I hope your swear jar's not as full as mine, because I better go and spend mine over the summer now. We'll do a little bit over the summer. There won't be a great deal, but we'll keep in touch over the summer. And we'll be back bigger and better. I've got bits going on, Steve, in the background. So, go on.
Yeah, Steve, we may have one really good guest if we can pull it off. But we'll let everybody know as and when, and if he agrees to come on, we'll certainly try.
Oh, absolutely,
and it'll be tied into the transfer window, no doubt. Hint, hint.
Yes, it'll.
Well, yeah, he's going to be, obviously, this is his busiest period, so we'll see. We'll see if he can spare us an hour or two.
Well, if he goes by what he said last time, he's usually on Zoom at 2 a.m, so we can probably catch him before that to come and chat with us. So hopefully we can get it done. And we've got a couple of things lined up, but we'll keep you all in the loop about what's going on. But yeah, keep listening, keep subscribing, keep liking. We're only going to get bigger and better. Get involved, get on next season. Come and have a chat with us. you know, I want to make our pre-season chat the biggest and best one it's ever going to be. And, you know, let's rewind it to 2015. You know, let's have a season where it's going to be absolutely superb. And, yeah, I can't wait to get going again once I've had a good rest, because last week was very, very painful. But on that note, I'll sign off. That's bye from me. I'll let you lads say bye now.
Up the Borough.
Like the Borough, we'll be back. Have a good summer.
And yeah, well, and Arnold Schwarzenegger as well. He'll be back. No, you're absolutely right. We'll be back. And yeah, from all of us, arrivederci. Be seeing you up the Borough.
Up the Borough.